Welcome to Crosstalk Podcasts, where we inspire recovery from addiction and discover a better way. Whether you're considering a life free from substances or you're already on that path, Crosstalk is here for you. Welcome, everyone, and welcome, Irene.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, listen, it's my pleasure. Anytime we do this, you are welcome to do it with me, seeing as how you're the co-host.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Who do we have today? What's going on?
We're in New York City, and we have a true New Yorker.
I mean, you won't be able to tell by her accent.
Introduce this lady, please.
Okay, this is April. April is fantastic. She's got my heart. I love her. I can't wait to hear what she's got to say. What about you?
I'm very excited.
You think we should kick her out?
No, I think we should get started.
Okay. April, welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So, what was life like before recovery?
What was life like before recovery? Erratic at best, difficult at best. I spent a great deal of time sober, not sober. The interesting thing that I like to speak about is I came into the rooms, and if you don't know what AA is, the term for coming into the rooms is when you're in recovery, and in AA, they call it coming into the rooms.
AA is Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So both AA and Karen, which was my rehab center that I went to for, 28 days, was me first coming into the rooms at 61 years old, which I know everyone always says, you're never going to get there until you're ready to get there. You can listen to a million people tell you what to do and how to do it. I do subscribe to that theory. However, I do also believe that there's not enough information out there about how to get help and where to get help, and that help does not have the negative stigma that we constantly give it. I feel as though if I had more of an awareness level and an acceptable level of what my disease was and how to treat it, I can't tell you 100% I would have done anything different in an earlier time frame, but it's possible. I knew that I had an issue many years before I went to rehab. And I knew because I was one of these people that would secretly go online and look up AA meetings and find out where they were and disappear from my home for an hour and a half. And I would walk into the local meeting 10 minutes late, because when you're not invested, but you're kind of curious, that's what you do. You walk in late.
You don't have to talk to anybody.
You pretend you're not there. I mean, it's like being there without being there. At least that's what it was for me. You don't have to acknowledge anybody. You don't have to make eye contact. You don't give anybody the opportunity to come over to you.
Let me guess, in the back row?
Of course. So as against the wall, forget the back row. There was no row. It was me and the wall.
So I have a question. Did you go drunk?
No.
Okay.
No.
So there was some attempt to like, let's try this.
There was an acknowledgement. There wasn't I wouldn't even call it an acknowledgement. There was a sense. There wasn't an acknowledgement. And I like to consider myself somebody who knows themselves very well. However, it's amazing what any sort of addiction will do to you. You are completely in denial, irrational, unable. You could rationalize anything. Mm. So not only would I go 10 minutes late, I would leave 10 minutes early. So out of a 60-minute meeting, I would sit through 45, 50 minutes. And again, half there and half not. Run out of the room before anybody saw me. So where I'm going with that is, I knew I had an issue. I just didn't know how great the issue was. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to get help. I didn't know who to go to.
Somebody once said in a meeting, there was a guy named Chuck at the 79th Street workshop in the 80s. Every time he raised his hand and spoke, he said, "My name is Chuck." He used his last name. He's gone now, Scanlon. "And I have a disease that keeps telling me I don't have a disease." Which is, I think, some part of what you're talking about, which is that you knew there was, you had something to be addressed, but probably you kept telling yourself there was another way to maneuver around it so you could keep doing it. Am I right?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, as different as all of our stories are, they have a lot of the same sort of inherent features and origins, which is we start something, we don't think it's problematic, we keep going, it may become problematic. Our behavior starts to change. We start to lie. We start to cheat. But the disease is so strong that you are able, I find myself able to rationalize everything. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing that simultaneously, I was blowing up the most important things in my life. I blew up my relationship with my son. I could not love anybody, care for anybody, unconditional love that I can't even explain to you. And yet I was ruining this kid's life while simultaneously kind of blaming him. You're making a big deal out of it. You are overreacting. I know I'm good. And the amazing thing to me is, you know, your children know you as well as you know them. We think they don't, but they do. So he knew within a half a second, let's just say his name was Corey. If I said, "Cuh," he knew right away that I was buzzed. He could tell by the change in my voice, the change in my mannerisms, the change in the inflection in my voice. So I always thought I was kidding him. And he would call me out on it all the time. And what I would do, very alcoholic behavior, I would tell him, he was crazy.
Right.
You're exaggerating. You're blowing this way out of proportion.
But there's also like a million signs pointing that you're a high-powered career woman. You've had it together for years.
Good point.
You know, have spoken in front of audiences. You've done all this stuff. So what are you talking about? You don't have a problem,
can't
right?
You have a problem with all those good things going on. It's impossible.
And you know, the interesting thing about you saying that is, again, I know I keep coming back to this, but not knowing how to get help, because the stigma is, to your point, it's some poor guy on the side of the road, you know, pushing a basket or pushing a shopping cart with blankets and stuff. It's not... This is my best analogy. Years and years ago, mental health had a horrific stigma. Nobody admitted they were in therapy. Nobody admitted they were depressed. Nobody admitted they were manic. Nobody admitted they had problems. Well, 20 years later, if you don't have a therapist, there's something wrong with you. So mental health went from being a horrific stigma to being on the tip of everybody's tongue 24 hours a day, all over social media, all over everything. Everything revolves around mental health now. I almost wish that alcoholism and addiction, excuse me, could have that same awakening, where to talk about alcoholism, to talk about drug abuse, to talk about whatever your addiction is as common as saying, "Oh yeah, I'm in therapy." It still has this very dark, deep, closed, stigmatized situation attached to it until you're in it. Now, once you're in it, I'll give you a perfect example. I'm at work yesterday. I work with a gentleman who's older than I am, excuse me, who's had about 38 years of sobriety. Ironically, we just found out about each other. We start to talk. I could tell he doesn't want to approach me unless I want to approach him, because it's obvious I'm much more uncomfortable about it than he is. He's also a veteran, so he does a lot of work with veterans. He does a lot of work with veterans who suffer from addiction. So yesterday, I'm like, "You know what, April, you're going to do crosstalk tomorrow. Like, enough already. Like, come clean." So we start to talk, and he's wonderful. And we're chatting, and he goes, like, how did you, you know, basically start your road to recovery? And I'm like, "I went to a phenomenal rehab." And he goes, "Which one?" And I go, "Karen." Well, the smile comes across his face. I'm like, "Get out of here." It's like 35 years ago, April.
Wow.
So the funny thing is, we're standing in this aisle and we're chatting, and I'm telling him about these two different meetings that I go back and forth to. One is 100 yards from my house and the other is a half an hour drive. And I do both because they both give me something different. They both have tremendous energy. I like to call the half an hour drive, it's like going to a hockey game. It's rowdy and energetic and everybody's yelling and stomping their feet. And the one that's closer to me is a scaled down version of that, but also just a great meeting, around forever. Both of these meetings are around forever, which I love, because it's a very eclectic mix of people, old timers, new timers, beginners, everything. So we're talking about the meetings, and I mentioned something. I mentioned the name of one of these meetings, and this woman turns around and goes, "I'm in recovery too." I mean, it was just out of the blue, like literally a perfect stranger. And I looked at her and I started laughing. She goes, "I used to go to that meeting." She's like, "The one in so-and-so?" I'm like, "Yeah, exactly." So it's not until you're in it, I feel, that we have this camaraderie, that we have this community of support, that we understand that the next right thing to do is to remain sober, not pick up, and help the next person who's sick and suffering. When you're not in it, it's a different world. It's something that you cannot understand, you cannot comprehend, and really doesn't touch you. So for me, I almost would love to see a way for the same way the mental health stigma became more sort of popular, for lack of a better way to put it, that addiction would become more popular.
I think that the reason why Corey and I don't want to speak for you, but the reason why we do this is because we want that stigma reduced and we want people to come out and say, you know, I am one too. I have a problem too.
Good for you. Good for you.
Listen, yeah. As we discussed when I first got here, that I was feeling somewhat anxious about doing this. And, you know, what I had said to you was, I feel for myself, it's a step that I need to take. More important than that, which I didn't say, is I think that it's part of everyone's recovery to be able to help the next person. I'm slowly but surely getting there. I mean, listen, one of my huge character defects is I talk out of both sides of my mouth. That has not ended. There's still a piece of me that it's like stigma, stigma, stigma. And then there's the other side of me that's like, do the right thing and help the next person. And I'm slowly but surely moving out of the, I'm not going to say anything person, into the, I'm going to be very out and about this. It takes me a while. I'm like a slow learn.
It took me a long time as well. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm 70 years old now. I know nobody can believe that. I'm 70 years old. I was 27.
No. I might add that you've not done any face work.
That's true.
Yeah.
Except, good. Oh, right. No. The stigma is still there. Let's not kid each other.
Mm-hmm. But, in a big way, especially for women. I have to interject. Women is a very different story than men. And I don't mean to isolate it, but trust me when I tell you, it is much different for a woman than it is for a man. And women have the opportunity to go to both shared men's and women's meetings, as well as women's only meetings. And I can tell you very strongly, there's two very different vibes in those rooms. I think that there's a camaraderie amongst women because we're expected to be the mom, be the house person, be the person who's working. I mean, right, wrong, or different than when you first went in. Now we are tasked with a lot of responsibilities. So you've really, quote unquote, failed if you have any sort of addiction, whether it's pills, whether it's alcohol, no matter what it is. So I think also for women, the expectation level of being an addict is much, I don't know whether to say lower or higher, lower than it is for men. For men, it's still that same sort of,
whoa,
good old boys, let's go out and have a drink, let's golf and have a beer, let's go to a football game and have a beer. And again, I'm not saying it's not the same for women, but truth be told, there's still a lot of stigma attached to being a woman, yeah, and being in rehab and being an alcoholic. And I do extremely treasure the fact that both Karen Rehab and AA is very, very firm about the women with the women and the men with the men. And there's a lot of reasons for that, yeah, that I truly support. What I want to come back to is, as I said earlier, there were two things that I really blew up. One, my relationship with my son, who I cherish, which slowly but surely is making gains. And I try very hard to understand where he's coming from. Caused him a great deal of grief, heartache, anxiety, fear, which he now lives with day to day, which thank goodness he's getting help for as well. And the second thing that I blew up was a really successful career that I loved. And again, just to show you the severity of this disease, I blew up the two things that were the most important to me. I blew up my son and I blew up my career of 40 years of success, of an excellent reputation, because I thought it would be a really good idea one night when I was wasted to text the owners of my company and tell them what I really thought of them and their business and their families, because I thought that was a really good idea. Because I thought everybody needed to hear what I had to say at the time. Also another huge character defect. I can't tell you that I've recovered from that in terms of, not I, but my career, which is a lot of other things that are in that mix in terms of a shrinking industry and just a whole thing that has gone south. And I know that whatever my behavior was, how far out in the world it got, I don't know. But I do know that, again, I always used to think that when people called addiction a disease, it was their excuse for doing it. Oh, yeah, well, they'll just write it off to it being a disease. This way they can just keep doing it with no repercussions. Let me tell you, this disease is as strong and vile and determined as, what did you say earlier, this gentleman used to say? My disease
keeps telling me I don't have a disease.
To this day, the thing that I cannot reconcile, and I seriously still cannot get over, is how this addiction, how this need just takes over everything. You know, there's a part of me that even at this stage of my life, I feel a little bit like a kid, because what I just said to you is learning life all over again. And for me, that's what a lot of this is. All the things that I think I knew, I did, but I didn't. And, you know, where I am today is I have a phenomenal, I call them my entourage. I have a phenomenal entourage. I have my Karen support group and alumni group, which is a phenomenal group for me. I've met fabulous people sitting across from me. And really, truly, like, of one mind and one being, which I never thought would be possible. And I never thought I would want to be a part of. So again, learning every day. So those things are very important. I have my two AA groups because I kind of adore both and I get different things out of both. And I have my AA peeps. I don't have a lot of AA peeps because for whatever reason, I can't take too much at once. I have a phenomenal sponsor who I remember when I was leaving Karen, they were like, yeah, just tap somebody on the shoulder and ask. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to tap somebody on the shoulder and ask. Tap, tap, tap. And she is a gift from above, is all I can tell you. I'm so grateful that this person is in my life day to day. And every time we leave each other, the conversation is, she says to me, you help me as much as I help you. Mm-hmm. And I walk away from that really believing that, because what we give each other, it is unbelievable.
So for people that are just starting out and want to know how the hell do you get a sponsor? Did you tap someone on the shoulder?
You want to know how I ended up with her?
That's what I want you to teach everybody.
I went to a meeting. First of all, because, you know, God forbid I should just walk into something and stick to it. I had to do sampling of meetings. I had to like go to all the different meetings in the neighborhood and see which one had my vibe, which I'm not kidding, I did. So I did a little like sample platter. Yeah. And one meeting that I went to that I didn't love the meeting. There was no energy, but I did find her. I went to a meeting that I had never been to before. And I'm sitting in this room, not very crowded. And this woman spoke. She wasn't the speaker, but she shared. And as I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, this is like the most coherent, intelligent, well-spoken person. You know, keep in mind, I'm fresh out of rehab. Life is still one big fuzz. I mean, there's no clarity whatsoever. Everything is still...
You know what we used to call that years ago? Mocus. That was the word. It's not a word.
I had a lot of mocus.
This is amazing. I've never heard that forever.
Anyway, so I didn't have the courage. I was like, April, get up, get up, get up. And I just couldn't find the courage. I left the meeting and I was like, okay, I'm going back the next day and I'm going to ask her. I go back the next day, she's not there. I was like, now keep in mind, I didn't know really anything about AA meetings. I didn't understand that people can come and go. People can religiously be there every day. Like, I just didn't understand like the ebb and flows of meetings. I go back the 2 days, she's not there. Now I'm like really starting to get, I'm like, okay, I found my person. Now my person's gone. Like, so already I'm making myself crazy. I go the third day and there she is. So now, like, this poor woman, I like pounced on her. She had to leave the room because I had been working this up for like 2 days now. I just walked over and I said, my name is April and I'm recently out of recovery. And she goes, yes.
I love it.
Well, what are some of the gifts?
Some of the gifts are getting up at 5:30 every morning and watching the sunrise, because I used to be a very late sleeper. And now I went back to being a very early riser, which is what I used to be. I was a big, what's the term? Black outer, whatever. I blacked out all the time. I can't believe how much I blacked out. And I think that the interesting thing is when you're truly blacking out, then you lead yourself to being a sober blackout because you don't want to remember the wasted blackout. So now everything becomes a blackout because when you're sober, you don't want to remember when you weren't sober. And when you weren't sober, you don't remember anyway. Yeah, tough way
to get that.
I did not, but I'm not going to touch it.
Did you get that?
So not having that feeling, not going through my phone the next morning, the relief of waking up knowing exactly when I fell asleep during severance last night is a gift that I cannot explain to you. And again, there are days that I struggle. I mean, I don't want to make this like one big, yeah, it's not. I mean, there are days where I struggle. There are days where I'm still having a very hard time meshing the old April and the new April. That is something that I discuss with Irene a lot. There were so many parts of me prior to what I like to call under construction April that I really liked and so many that I didn't like. And for me, I'm having difficulty, although I'm having a lot of help, merging sort of the two people. Because a lot of times the new me doesn't know how to move forward as the new me when the old me never gave anything a second thought. Fearless, you know, again, talked way too much, thought I was right about everything. My campaign for 2025 through 3035 will be April, shut the F up, because I thought I knew everything. I thought I could tell you how to do everything. I thought I knew better. Which I also think is a big alcoholic trait. I hear a lot of people talk about that in terms of, you know, either they were way too insecure or they thought they knew everything. But getting past a lot of that is just trying to find a comfortable place. So my gifts are everything that I get from waking up and feeling good, trying to reestablish relationships, trying to make much better decisions, working the 12-step program, which I left out of this conversation, which is, I think everybody should have to work the 12-step program just for day-to-day life. I don't care whether you have addiction or not.
I think the exact same thing.
I mean, to me, it is like a set of, this is how you do it. This is how we do it. But seriously, yeah. It's a guide.
April, you are, I love you. You're a delight. I'm so proud of you for doing this. I know how anxious you were to get this started, or should I say, not really thrilled about the whole idea, but I'm so grateful that you did this with us.
I'm grateful that you had me, and I'm grateful that you made me feel so comfortable, all of you.
I'm really happy.
Me too.
This one probably happy too.
I really am, and when I first asked you, I'm like, she's probably going to back out, you know?
It crossed my mind.
No one would be upset, right? This is all about self-disclosure. No one can get upset if someone wants. We've had someone call us and say, listen, it went up. I heard it. And I'm wondering if you can take it down. And I happened to have something in my teeth that episode. So we were like, that's fine.
Didn't work for Irene. Didn't work for Irene. Kill it.
Yeah. But, you know, in the end of the day, this is all like, there's a little bit of selfishness, I think, that we have to have, and that's taking care of yourself, right? Because without doing that, you're not going to be able to be there for the people you love in your life that you're repairing those things, right? Because if you don't take care of yourself, like, how can you show up for them?
That's the other thing that I learned, and I'm learning every day in recovery, is, which I think for some people comes naturally, for other people like you and I, it doesn't. I never, ever took care of myself. And I'm not a martyr. I mean, don't get me wrong. I did all the things I wanted to do when I wanted to do them. But that's different than not knowing that if you don't take care of yourself to be healthy, everything else is going to fall apart.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people take care of themselves. I'm not sure it's necessarily in the direction of health or well-being or well-mind being. So that's different than just taking care of yourself. So exactly what you're saying, if I'm not good, then nobody in my life is going to be good.
And I think the bar is different for everyone, right?
Like, yes.
my bar was so freaking low in the beginning, and now it's much higher. And I hold myself to a higher standard. And when I am rude to someone or yell at someone or don't take care of myself or don't meet my needs, it upsets me. I'm like, come on, Irina, you know better than that. You know, you got to like raise the bar.
Well, I think also, you know, and I know we keep going back to this, but I just can't speak to it enough. You're now exposed to, you're now included in a completely different family.
Right.
And we don't have to have years together. We don't have to know each other's sisters and brothers' first names. None of that matters. It's the connection that we have, that we're all, every walk of life, that we all suffer from something. Mm-hmm. And that same something, right, wrong, or indifferent, is almost closer than some of your blood relatives. You don't necessarily yeah. have to have the same DNA to have a closeness. My problem and your problem are the same. And we both know that, what is the expression? One's not enough. A hundred's too many, a thousand's too many, whatever it is. That's my life. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's everybody else's life as well, whatever it is that you're picking up. That is a bond that, again, unless you're in it, and yeah. I don't take anything away. You know, my therapist always says this to me, and I love this. She said, you know, the difference between the haves and the have-nots. And what I love is she refers to us addictives, us alcoholics, as the haves, which I find very funny. She said, is the haves, if you're in recovery and you're working the steps, are willing to acknowledge your flaws. Right. You're willing to come to terms with your character defects, or at least try to.
Right.
You're trying to acknowledge them, and then hopefully you're trying to do something about them. Us have-nots, we don't give a shit. Right. We just keep plowing through. Yeah, we may say, oh, I could have done this differently. I could have done that differently. But we're not spending the time and energy focusing on how to do it differently.
Yeah.
That is the best way to close an episode.
Yeah.
It's really good. Really good.
This was awesome. I like her.
Thank
what
you
do you
guys.
Think?
Are you going to keep me?
I'll keep you.
High marks.
Yeah, yeah. I think that you graduate. Anyway, thank you for coming. But I also have one last question. If you could go back in time and say something impactful to yourself, what age would it be, and what message would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself kind of how I started, which is I understand that you have to do something when you're ready. But I would tell anyone, including myself, get ready early. Don't wait. Don't wait.
How old would you be when you gave yourself that message?
Oh my gosh. I would say...
This is now inner child work.
I would say in my early 20s.
Okay. That's great.
You know, what's interesting, I'm going to speak one more minute. When I was a Karen, there's a young adults unit. Mm-hmm. And then there's the rest of us. And what I used to think every time I saw these young adults, because they segregated them from the rest of the population for very good reasons, and they kept them together, is, oh, damn, I feel so sorry for these kids. They're so young, and they have to go through all this, and they have to go in rehab. And then after being there for about 2 weeks, I was like, God, I wish I was one of those kids.
Yeah.
God, I wish I had the opportunity to get this help early. Mm-hmm. Like, again, you don't want to sit on the who knows what would have happened, but I would tell myself in my early 20s, live a sober, healthy life.
Yeah. I mean, if I told myself that, I wouldn't listen, but I agree. I see people that are young and I'm just like, oh, you know, do it. Don't stop.
Yeah, the earlier the better.
All right.
Hey, listen, folks listening to this Crosstalk podcast, thank you for watching our episode with April. This wraps our weekend in New York City.
This weekend, we have another one.
We do, but this weekend is over. We're a little tired.
Exhausting.
But we want you to subscribe and like and give us your comments.
Donate.
Smack the bell. Yeah, donate. Well, Crosstalk Official Foundation, if you want information, message us. We'll tell you how to make a tax-deductible donation to Crosstalk. We have a great time doing this. We hope you are enjoying it as well. And thanks for watching.
Thank you, April.
Thank you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you. Again, you have no idea how much you just helped me.
You help us. And I'm witnessing your pink cloud. There's that expression. And it's really cool. I'm kind of like, I want to go back in time. No, really. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, guys. All right, let's go eat. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.